Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
This is Mark Schaefer, the lead author of the most amazing marketing book ever. And you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which has been named by Forbes and LinkedIn, amongst others, as one of the top marketing podcasts. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since I get to read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or any other resource I know of for whatever challenge you're facing, send me a LinkedIn connection invite with a message that you're a listener, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. My name again is Douglas Burdett. All right, let's get on with the show. Today, we welcome back Mark Schaefer to talk about the book he has co-authored with 35 other authors, The Most Amazing Marketing Book Ever. Mark Schaefer is an internationally recognized keynote speaker, educator, business consultant, author, and all-around nice guy. Mark has worked in global sales, PR, and marketing positions for over 30 years and now provides consulting services, marketing strategies, and marketing workshops with his firm, Schaefer Marketing Solutions. He is the best-selling author of 10 books, is the host of the Marketing Companion podcast, and his blog is one of the top marketing blogs in the world. Mark has shared his insights on television and radio networks and in periodicals, including The Wall Street Journal, Wired, The New York Times, CNN, National Public Radio, CNBC, the BBC, and CBS News. He is a regular contributing columnist to the Harvard Business Review.
Hello, Harvard, yo!
And interesting fact, Mark Schaefer is the king of the Marketing Book Podcast, and this interview marks his ninth book interview on the show more than any other author.
I am your king.
Your Highness, congratulations on the most amazing marketing book ever, and welcome back to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Well, thank you. As I have this honor, I would like to make one opening statement to the Marketing Book Podcast listeners. You're about to have some fun. We're, you know, as Doug's style, we're going to have some jokes. We're going to have some little audio clips. You're going to learn a lot. But I want to say something, being on the show more than anybody else, and that is, there is nobody that puts more care, more effort, more intellectual power into their podcast than Douglas Burnett. And I just want you to know and appreciate all the work that goes on behind the scenes. I can see it because I've been on the show. But I just want to give you a round of applause, Doug.
Sweet.
For what you've built. And on behalf of your fans and your guests and all your wonderful audience, I just want to thank you because you just put so much effort into this. And I just want to let you know I appreciate it.
Are you guys having a killer time?
Mark Schaefer, thank you so much. That means so much to me. And you have been a longtime supporter of the Marketing Book Podcast. You're one of the very first authors I interviewed. I get so excited when I'm able to interview you, and you are very popular with the listeners. But you know what? I do this podcast because it's so much fun for me, and I love learning, and I just admire folks like you who write these books, and you know, I get to talk to you. So. But, Mark Schaefer.
Welcome back, friend.
Where do you get these things?
So, speaking of Schaefer, I just have to ask, and I've never asked this. There's always new material here on the Marketing Book Podcast when I'm interviewing the king of the Marketing Book Podcast.
Schaefer, the one beer to have when you're having more than one.
So, Mark Schaefer, is it true that you are heir to the Schaefer beer fortune?
No, but that little ad that you played was a famous ad for the Schaefer beer. I believe it came out of New York or something. It was a popular beer when I was a kid. But that phrase, Schaefer, the one beer to have when you're having more than one, haunted me as a child. Because, and here's why.
Sorry to dredge all that up, sure.
Yeah, I mean, a chill went down my spine. Because when I was playing Little League, and they tried using me as a pitcher. I didn't do so well. So the other team started chanting, Schaefer, the pitcher you'll have if you're having more than one.
Oh.
They were mean to me, Doug.
I know. We talked about that on the last interview, but look at you now. Yeah. How you like me now. Yeah.
How you like me now, baby.
So, yeah, that's – well, I'm sorry to dredge all that up, but, you know, let's go ahead and finish it off.
Schaefer is the one beer to have when you're having more than one.
So, Mark Schaefer, you know, this is the most amazing marketing book ever, and that may be one of the longest titles that I've had on the show. And then I later learned that it's the acronym, which I've been using in all my files and record keeping, is T-M-A-M-B-E. Tamambe. And
Tamambe.
Do you know what Tamambe reminds me of?
Probably something from The Lion King.
It reminds me of the Western Lowland gorilla who lived at the Cincinnati Zoo, and in 2016, when a child fell into his enclosure, Harambe was shot with a rifle to protect the child's safety.
Oh, wow.
Tamambe, Harambe. Mm-hmm. So, you didn't know that you had like a mascot for the book, but for those who are not familiar with Harambe, following the killing, he became the subject of multiple viral memes with a proliferation of over-the-top tributes to him, including this one by none other than Elon Musk.
R.I.P. Harambe, sipping on some Bombay, we on our way to heaven, amen, amen.
Now, what is most interesting, though, is that Harambe is a Swahili term for communal labor. And what better connection than the most amazing marketing book ever with over 35 authors?
Is that true?
I read it on the internet, so it must be true.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. That's what makes this book so amazing.
Well, and I think the book is being very well received. It's very exciting. And I like to think that maybe Harambe is kind of looking over you and all the authors and, you know, sending good blessings your way. So now, Mark, I mentioned that you've been on the podcast more than any other author. And I hope that hasn't kept you from getting good consulting gigs because people might question your judgment. But there are two authors that if I were you, I would be careful of. And they are coming for you. Do you know who they might be?
Yes, I do. Well, one is David Meerman Scott.
No, he's that's right. Yeah, no, but he's not coming for you. He's very comfortable with where he is. He's the patron saint of the Marketing Book Podcast. He's been on 8 times.
Well,
and now you've been on, this is your 9th time. So he's fine. And he likes you a lot and he's good.
Well, I heard I think it was your last show with Rohit Bhargava. Yeah, I'm sorry. I know Rohit and
great guy.
He dissed me. He dissed me on your last show.
I forgot that part.
No, you don't forget it. You're just trying to get me to say it.
No.
He said I think you said something about that I had been on the show more than him, and he said, "Oh, well, he's just so much older than me."
Yeah, I don't know. That kind of slipped past me because I don't know how true that is. I know he's a little bit younger.
I actually looked up his age.
Okay. Well, I didn't do that.
Yeah, because I was going to diss him back, but I am, alas, older than him.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. Well, those two come to mind. Who am I missing?
Well, I'll give you a hint.
Well, that sounds like maybe the theme from The Godfather. So Marlon Brando?
No, the godfather of content marketing.
Oh.
Joe Polizzi.
I was half right. I was half right.
So you have no idea how you have recommitted them to writing more books and upping their writing game. You are doing things, but you're still the king, and you will always be the king of the Marketing Book Podcast. But to those guys, to Rohit and to Joe Polizzi, I was watching a documentary the other day about Mark Schaefer, and Borat was interviewed, and this is what he said about Mark Schaefer.
He is a strong man. He will crush his opponents.
So I was really impressed that they got him to weigh in on Mark Schaefer. But anyway, listen, let's get to the book. What a book. I want to read from actually the back cover, which I don't normally do. What happens when Mark Schaefer assembles 35 of his smartest marketing friends from around the world with more than 750 years of accumulated experience and asks for their best marketing ideas? Well, it's something amazing. In fact, it's the most amazing marketing book ever. This fun and exciting book is filled with insights to inspire everyone from entrepreneurs and students to the most experienced marketing professional. The most amazing marketing book ever takes you on a ride from traditional marketing ideas like billboards and email to the metaverse and beyond. In this book, you will learn foundational principles of marketing strategy, content marketing, and social media, inside tips to propel your business through LinkedIn, email, and advertising, insights into emerging trends such as NFTs, Web3, and artificial intelligence, practical tips to help you with research, strategic communications, and measurement, and much more. Mark Schaefer, why is this the most amazing marketing book ever?
Because this wasn't just a book. This was a reality show.
Tell us all. Let's go behind the scenes.
Well, I mean, I think one of the reasons, maybe the main reason this book is so distinctive, is that there's literally never been a book like this before. The germ of the book really began 3 or 4 years ago. I teach a class on personal branding, and I was talking to this woman who was one of my students, and her dream was to write a book. But she was a single mom. She had, you know, a bunch of young kids. She was trying to run a business at her home, had a lot of other things going on in her life. And I thought, I'm not sure she has the resources to really write a book anytime soon, but I thought, you know, she could write a chapter of a book. Is there some way I could create a platform, use my platform as an established author to help elevate people like that to be a co-author of a book? And I put the idea aside, and now for the last 2 years, I've had this marketing community called Rise, and it's on Discord, and we've got subject matter experts in every kind of marketing all over the world, and it's a vibrant group. We're learning about the future of marketing. We do experiments in the metaverse, and we have discussions on AI, and we're creating a podcast together. And my friend Daniel Nessel said, you know, we have so many smart people here. Could we create a book? And it sort of triggered this idea again. I let it percolate for a while, and there was so much energy, so much passion around this idea that I decided to take a risk. Now, the reason this was unusually risky is because other things that we're doing in the community are literally created by the community. They're creating the metaverse events and the AI events and all the things that we're doing. It's not really a risk to me personally in terms of my personal brand. But I thought to give this book the best chance to be accepted, to be reviewed, the best chance we would have at getting the book published internationally. I needed to attach my name to this. And it was a risk to think that, can I count on 35 other people to create something great? Not only write it great, but then narrate it for the audiobook. Would they hit their deadlines? Would it be like herding cats? Would it be so stressful? And in the end, I decided, you know, this is a worthy goal. This is an opportunity out of the 36 authors of the book, the co-authors of the book. I think it's something like 32 had never written a book before. And it was a chance for them to be a co-author, and it'll be something that will live with them forever. And I thought, you know, that is a great legacy for me to be able to do this for the community. So I decided to take the risk, and it was quite the opposite from herding cats. The people who were involved were so committed, so passionate, and the most inspiring thing is that anytime we hit a roadblock, someone stepped up and said, I'll do it. I'll handle it.
That's a community.
It was just unbelievable. Everybody pitched in money. I said, look, you know, we're going to do this together. There's publishing costs. There's editing costs. There's design costs. So we divided it up. We figured out what the estimate would be. Everybody pitched in money. As the book sells, the profits are going to be divided up equally. Everyone's going to benefit from it. And it turned out to be absolutely remarkable. It just, people cared so much. I mean, there was a lot of anxiety, even sometimes tears, about the worry about making this book the best it could be, being worthy of being part of my personal brand. So there was a lot of commitment, a lot of passion, in some cases a lot of agony about doing a good job. We had people step up to be editors. People stepped up to be designers. People stepped up on promotions. We had a fellow donate note cards and stickers and promotional materials. So one of the authors of the book, Frank Prendergast, designed the cover, used AI to design the cover. And it's a beautiful cover that really stands out. So we did. I mean, he just stepped up. He said, I think I can do this. And he did a marvelous job. So, I mean, every time we needed help, people stepped up. And people kept saying, Mark, what can we do? What can we do? We don't want this to be stressful for you. And it was a joy. It wasn't herding cats. Everybody hit the deadline. And here is perhaps the coolest comment that came out of this. I use this audio editor, and I've used her for my books for many, many years. And so everybody, we've got people from 10 different countries, 15 different time zones, who narrated their chapter of the book. So the audio book is like Forrest Gump's box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. There's an Irish accent, then someone from Italy, someone from France, someone from America. She said, when you told me what you're doing, I thought this was a crazy idea. I've never seen a book like this. And she said, now that it's done, I just want to congratulate you. She said, not only did the authors do a fantastic job narrating it, she said, this is really a great book full of great ideas. And so it was like she was so surprised. She's been editing audiobooks for 25 years.
Well, that's interesting, and I wonder if we're going to start seeing more of this type of thing where a community pulls together to write a book. Yeah. Now, I have to say there have been a few books over the years that have come across my desk, and they are books where each chapter was an interview with a different person, and they haven't been very well edited. This is absolutely not that at all. This was really well edited, and you really cover a lot of ground, as I'm going to mention in all the different sections here. So, Mark, there are 350 ideas in the book, according to the cover here. So let's go through every single one and then turn this into a bonus companion piece for the audiobook, which will actually be even longer than the audiobook. I'm kidding.
I do want to build on one thing that you mentioned about the editing, is that we had three people from our community volunteer. They're professional writers, professional editors. They volunteered to do the first cut of editing. So they each did about, 12 chapters. But we did hire a professional editor. I mean, we weren't going to compromise in any way. We did hire a professional editor to do the final edit. We did hire a professional designer. So this is not a DIY book in any respect.
Were those first editors Joanne Taylor, Brian Piper, and Daniel Nestle?
Yes.
Okay.
Nestle, yeah.
That's great. And then you've got all the other folks that contributed here. So we're not going to do that. But let me just give the listener a sense of what's in here. I mean, just what was picked in such a concise book was I kind of marveled at. So the book is in five parts. The first is strategy fundamentals. Two is content strategy. Three is social media. Four is what you call marketing standards. And five is what's next. And I want to start with the fifth section, actually, because you guys are always at the end. And there's also a chapter, your chapter, on the magic of personal branding. But I also want to mention the other people in that fifth section. Then we'll go back and hit the others. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when there are non-American authors, I will indicate where they are from around the world. And the reason I'm going to do that, Mark, is because there comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world Uh-oh. Must come together as one. Because we are the ones who make a brighter day, Mark. So let's start.
That's a great giving. Theme song, actually.
Yeah, you got a mascot and a theme song. You're
yeah,
welcome.
Because yeah, because people just became very, very good friends. And one other thing I'll mention, we're actually coming together for a book launch party at my house.
Oh, really? Not at
yes.
the Knoxville Denny's?
No. I think we've got, of the 36 authors, I think we have 21.
Wow.
Including two from Ireland and one from Australia that
wow.
are coming to my house just to celebrate, just to see each other face to face for the first time. And so that's exciting.
Well, that's terrific. That's even more amazing. I think you should just turn this whole book into a Netflix show.
It like could be.
A Netflix
it
special
could be. It could
on
be.
How it,
could
it happened.
Be.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, the thing that I underestimated about this, Doug, is the emotion. I mean, I don't think Daniel will mind me pointing him out specifically, but Daniel was an editor, but he was also an author. I mean, and Daniel is a professional communicator and one of the best writers I know. And he turned in his chapter. He said, "I've never been so worried in my life. I can't sleep. Is Mark going to say this is okay? Is this going to get to the editors?" And it was like this drama. And then I said it was great, and I approved it to the next stage. He said, "My eyes are filled with tears of joy." And then we went through a whole nother drama when people were doing the narration, which is a lot harder than they thought, and a few people had to, they had to do it four or five times to get the narration right. So it was really a reality show.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, let me tell you what's in part five. There's your chapter on personal branding, and then Brian Piper wrote about marketing in the metaverse. And I should add, Brian Piper, co-author of mm-hmm. Epic Content Marketing mm-hmm. Second Edition with your buddy Joe Polizzi, and Yuri Belast, how to mm-hmm. use Web3 NFTs and tokens for your marketing. And Yuri is in Belgium. Yes. Which, as everyone knows, is the where Dr. Evil is from.
I didn't spend 6 years in Evil Medical School to be called Mr.
And then Mary Catherine Johnson wrote Marketing AI. And then Anna Brovington, Experiential Marketing. And she's in Bournemouth, England. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Mark Masters.
Yeah.
I bet she knows him well. And then Pepper Brooks wrote about inclusive marketing. Mm-hmm. Marketing for all. So let's just...
And Pepper's from Toronto.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. She's from Toronto. She messaged me today to let me know that because I couldn't figure that part out.
Yeah, there's actually on my website, I've got a page for the most amazing marketing book ever. And there's actually like a PDF with all the author profiles, and it has like a little flag of the countries
yes,
that they're from.
Yes, and Pepper Brooks sent
Pepper did that. Yeah.
Yeah, she sent it to me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So thanks, Pepper, for doing you know what Mark should have done. Now, on page 221, you write, as many traditional marketing jobs are threatened by AI, artificial intelligence, an effective personal brand may be the only buffer we have against irrelevance. Mark, I'm seeing... Every day on my newsfeed, I have all these AI people talking about this or that about AI, and it's like I want to quote that. I want to post that quote right there for everyone to calm down. But explain what you mean. How your personal brand can be helpful in this new era we're suddenly thrust into?
Well, Doug, it's more than it's more than helpful. It's essential. As far as you know, it might be the only defense we have. You know, you've seen the same studies I have. Deloitte and McKinsey and Accenture are estimating that, you know, AI could take over somewhere between 30% and 60% of many marketing and sales tasks for that matter. But so let me just give you a little illustration of what I mean by this. The personal brand is, it might be our last defense against AI. So when ChatGPT came out, I interviewed Shelley Palmer. Shelley is a well-known tech analyst. He's been on the Today Show. He's blogged every day for like the last 15 years. And I interviewed him for my podcast. And he said, Mark, he said, this terrified me. He said, I went to ChatGPT. And I said, I want you to write a blog post about the legislative challenges that Facebook faces in the U.S. Congress. And I want you to write it in the voice of Shelley Palmer. He said, in 5 seconds, it wrote this amazing blog post. I could have used it right on my blog. And he said, it even did research into the specific legislation that was being considered in Congress. He said, it saved me all that work and all that time. And he said, I am 80% replaced. Mm. Now, what's the 20%? The 20% is there's only one Shelley. We love Shelley. We trust him because of what he's established, his presence, his reputation, his authority. And in this world where we're not going to know what to believe, I mean, the age of misinformation is just starting. We're going to turn to people like you, people like me, people like Shelley, who have worked for many years to build our personal brand. People love us and they trust us. And I'm not afraid of AI, at least in the short to medium term. Because people will still come to me. I've even adopted a little badge I put on my blog post to assure people. It says 100% human content.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I love it.
And so, I mean, I'm not going to unsubscribe to Shelley's blog. I don't think people are going to unsubscribe to my blog because they know me. And you know, many people, I would say, even love me and they trust me. And AI can't replace that. That's the power of the personal brand. And I've been shouting this from the rooftops for at least 6 or 7 years. You could see this coming, that if you're not working on your personal brand, please do it. please start. It's not too late. It's the only thing we could have as our defense against AI.
So what are some of the things that people should be doing to help establish their personal brand?
Well, as you know, this is a very important topic to me. It's one I've researched extensively. I wrote the best-selling book on personal branding called Known. That was a two-year research effort. And I'm very, very proud of that book because it works. I also teach a personal branding masterclass you can find online. And what I found, Douglas, is that I interviewed 97 people around the world who are known in their field, not just marketing people, but you know, people in finance and education and real estate and construction and art and music. And they all did the same four things. Very briefly, they are, number one, you have to be very specific about where you fit in the ecosystem. What do you want to be known for? That's harder than it sounds. Number two, you need to, once you sort of have your story, you have to think about where you want to tell it. Point three, part three, is how are you going to tell it? You've got to show up. You've got to create content consistently. And number four, you need to build an actionable audience, which is much different than a list of customers or a list of social media connections or Twitter followers. Those are weak relational links. You need to actively build an audience that will help you make your dreams come true. So those are really the four stages. I think they've stood the test of time, and that's the process that really works.
Right, and explain what you mean when you write that you should not confuse social media with content.
That's a great, great question. I'm glad you asked it. A common point of confusion and overwhelm is people think about, well, you know, I want to have an effective presence and reputation and authority in the world. Do I need to be on Facebook or LinkedIn? Do I need to be making YouTube videos? I don't even know where to start. It seems so overwhelming, but it's not. What fuels the personal brand is content, and it's not that hard. You've got basically three choices, maybe four. You can write something like a blog. You can produce something like a podcast, which you do so effectively. You can do a video series on YouTube. For most professionals, it's those three choices. There's also an option, of course, to create sort of visual content that you might see on Instagram or Pinterest, something like that. But generally speaking, you've got three choices. You've got to create original content. Now, social media is the distribution system. Once you have a blog, you can post it on LinkedIn, Twitter, Medium, Substack, Facebook. So people think that social media is really the key to personal branding. It's really the content. And then social media becomes the distribution system. It's like the fleet of trucks taking your ideas to the marketplace.
Yeah, and on page 222, you write, how do you choose what kind of content to produce? Like you said, consider the competition and your audience, of course, but most important, pick the content form that brings you the most joy. If you're not having fun creating your content, your audience will sense that and leave you. So, oh my goodness.
And that's why you've been so successful, because obviously you have fun doing this show. You bring energy and fun to every single show. And if that ever stopped, your audience would know. And that's the beginning of the end. So you know, you've got to create something that's fun, that brings you joy.
Yes. So let me jump back to the first section here. I'll maybe ask one question about each section, but I do want to mention all the authors and the topics so that the listener can know what's in this book. Mm-hmm. So the first chapter is on marketing strategy from Samantha Stone. Robbie Fitzwater, Clemson marketing professor, he wrote about why the four P's still matter and relates to the marketing mix. And then the third chapter is about marketing research with Marcy Cornett and Frank Pendergast. And they are in Ireland, although I believe she's an American, right?
She is an American that lives in Cork, Ireland with Frank.
There we go. And then Consumer Behavior, Scott Murray, and Building an Exceptional Brand with David Bisek, and then Moving Customer Experience to the Digital Front with Lisa Apolinsky, and then Meaningful Marketing Measurement with Bruce Scheer. Mm-hmm. So I want to jump to the chapter on marketing research. It's just, mm-hmm. I mean, so much of it, it's almost like I could have spun the Wheel of Fortune wheel to figure out, you know, one question from each section. But I wanted to go to this section on marketing research because I see a lot of problems companies have with it. Mm. And they write about, I want to quote this one thing about how to get insights from customers with one question. They write, here is a simple survey every small business should put in place. After a visitor opts in to any offer on your website, direct them to a thank you page that contains this one question survey. What was going on in your life that brought you to, you know, like join my newsletter, book a demo, order this solution today? They write, Copy Hacker's founder, Joanna Wiebe, says the answers to this question will reveal priceless customer insights, such as what problems they are trying to solve, what motivating forces are driving them, and what obstacles are keeping them from achieving their goals. And they go on to write about how interviews can help you gain deeper understanding. And they write that even as few as three interviews can unearth marketing gold. Mark, what, in your experience, is keeping more, if not most, organizations from getting even the most basic insights from their customers?
First of all, I'm so happy you highlighted that example and the simple nugget there of just asking that one question is a great example of the very helpful and unique insights that are in this book. Look, this is going to sound weird, but I think there's this sort of like arrogance that's out in the world today. And I'll give you my favorite example of marketing arrogance, Google Glass. Now, Google is a beloved company, well, for most people or some people. And back at least when they introduced Google Glass, they were a very trusted company. And they introduced this product. They charged $1,500 for Google Glass, and they created this group of beta testers. I think they called them like the Pioneers or the Explorers. Do you remember that?
Yeah, they were also called Glassholes.
Glassholes, yeah. Okay, yeah.
I didn't want to talk to anybody wearing them because it was like creeping me out.
Yeah. So, as everybody knows, Google Glass crashed and burned very, very quickly. Within 6 months of the product introduction, they took the market, the product off the market, and you had all these people who were their best fans who had spent $1,500 on these glasses, and they were betrayed, essentially. And what upsets me the most, Doug, is that every problem with that product could have been discovered in 48 hours of market research. I actually got to go to Google's research laboratory. I was doing a project for the U.S. Air Force, and I was helping the Air Force consider the use of virtual reality, integrating this into their operations. Think about jet maintenance. If you had a pair of glasses over your head and you didn't have to refer to a computer or some handbook, you could much more quickly, effectively, and safely do repairs on these jets. So we were looking at all these options. I got to go to their research lab. I got to talk to the people who were developing Google Glass. And here's what they told me. We just didn't do the market research. We're developers, we're engineers, we're not marketers. I mean, the glasses got too hot on your head. you couldn't wear them more than 15 minutes without burning your scalp.
I did not know that.
I mean, there were problems with the battery. There were problems with connectivity. There were problems with security. I mean, every single problem could have, you know, put these glasses on 100 people's heads for a couple of days. So either they didn't do the research or they ignored the research, but in any event, it was arrogance. And I've seen this over and over again, where the marketer thinks they're the market.
Mm-hmm.
And they either don't do the research or they ignore the research. And that's really the point of this chapter written by Frank and Marcy, to look, you can't skip that step. And it's not that hard. It can be as simple as a survey question or just getting out there and talking to a few customers.
Oh, yes. That's where they say as few as three interviews can unearth marketing gold. And there was another part on here.
Absolutely, that's true.
Another great tip was research non-buyers for a balanced perspective. If you focus exclusively on existing customers, your data will be skewed. Survey or interview non-buyers as well. Answers to why didn't you buy our offer will uncover obstacles and anxieties that prevented purchases. And I can remember in Adele Rovella's book, Buyer Personas, and in other things she's written and talked about, how one of the best buyer persona interviews you can do, the very best, is to interview somebody who considered your company but then went elsewhere. If you can get that interview, and we've done it, it was always just unbelievably revelatory. So let's jump to part two, content strategy. And let me mention who the contributors are here. Very impressive. So you've got content marketing strategy with Karen Abou, and she is from France, and she's a lawyer, and she's a Marketing Book podcast listener. The next one is about blogging and SEO by Victoria Benyon from Weymouth, England. And then Marion Abrams and Chad Perisman wrote about The Power of Podcasting, where I learned all the things I'm doing wrong. No, I'm kidding. It was a really, really good chapter. And then Laura Doman, who I believe at one point she was an actress, leveraging your videos and YouTube channel. And then Ian Anderson Gray from Manchester, England, The Extraordinary Power of Live Streaming. And then Al Boyle and Giuseppe Frattoni wrote, create a powerful marketing message to grab your ideal client's attention. And because Giuseppe is actually in Rome, I noticed that every page number in that chapter was with Roman numerals.
Oh, so, I wish I would have thought of that. That would have been funny.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you got to watch those Romans, you know. Yeah. But let me ask you, let's go to that chapter and let me ask you about that. Again, it was sort of like the one we just talked about. Let's see, that's page 97 for those playing the home game. They write, I've just got to read this. This is all about messaging. I mean, you know, here we are talking about some of the basics. There's the market research. This is about messaging. And they wrote on page 98, it's all about your customer. Marketing is all about effective communication with your customers, so it's critical to lead with their interests. When your ideal customer consumes your marketing message, they're wondering what's in it for them. They want to solve the problem that's keeping them up at night, and you must earn their trust and help them understand how your offering can help them solve it. To accomplish that, you must know them, and not how you know your neighbor, but how you know an old friend. This goes far beyond their age, location, gender, education, and socioeconomic status. Delve into their worldviews, values, beliefs, and the causes they support. Know your prospects so well, you can manifest them, and your message will write itself.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
And they write, it's just solid gold. Use their words to describe their problem. How many times do we see companies using their own terminology? And right off the bat, it's like, well, they don't even get me. They don't understand me. Anyway, I wanted to ask you the next page. Hang on. this came up in some of your books. I know Marketing Rebellion. They write, nobody is more effective at speaking for you than your customers. And you've written about how your customers are your marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about
that.
Well,
I might have had a little influence on some of these chapters.
Well, but it's so true. It's so true. Your customers are your marketing. And I think that's not widely understood. Maybe people the listeners of this show.
Yeah. So 2 points. You know, you talked about the first point they made about, you know, your copy, your message has to be about your customers and your customers' problems. And I do a lot of coaching, a lot of business coaching, and 90% of the time, the message on the website is all about them. It's all about how great they are, how many awards they've won. And it's the first thing I start with. I say, nobody cares. What I want to see when I come to your website is, what is the problem you solve and how do you uniquely solve it? Start there. So I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, and that sort of builds on the second idea that the customer is the marketer. Because we live in this world of misinformation now, and we live in this world of hype. And whenever you go out there and say, we're the best ever, people are going to say, they're going to roll their eyes and they're going to say, yeah, that's what we thought you'd say. But, many of your listeners will be familiar with the Edelman Trust Barometer. Mm-hmm. This is research that's done by Edelman every year. I think they do it, I don't know, maybe 25 different countries. It's really wonderful research. And for 15 years in a row, trust in businesses, brands and advertising has declined. Who do people trust? We trust each other. We trust our friends. We trust our neighbors. We trust our family. And by the way, we also trust business executives. I was just looking at this. I was working on a project in India, and business executives in India are the most trusted source of information. People trust founders, technical experts. And so when other people are telling the story, when your customers are telling the story, if they're creating user-generated content, if they're posting about you on social media, if they're talking about you with their friends, if they're leaving reviews and testimonies, that is better than any ad, any marketing messaging you could do on your own. So how do we create a message, an idea, a story that's so compelling, so unmissable that our customers can't wait to talk about it? That is the marketing mindset we need to think about today.
Amen. Oh, so well said. And again, this isn't being fair because we're just pulling out a few things from each section. But let's go over to section 3 here. And I want to give folks a sense of what's in there. So Cami Heiss wrote how to build a future-proof social media strategy. And then Mandy Edwards wrote about Facebook. And Richard Bliss wrote about hacking the LinkedIn algorithm. Joanne Taylor, catching cultural waves on TikTok. And Valentina Escobar Gonzalez, becoming memorable and intentional on Instagram. And then Julia Bramble, who is in... let me back up. Joanne Taylor, she lives in Sri Lanka. Check that box there. I believe she's British, but she lives in Sri Lanka right now. And then Julia Bramble lives in East Devon, England. She wrote 10 easy steps to 10x your impact on Twitter. And Jules Morris, be a digital advertising hero, all about digital advertising. So, as I said, this isn't fair. And I want to go to chapter 16 about hacking the LinkedIn algorithm by Richard Blisk and ask a couple of questions because... It's a great chapter, as all of these are, but also Richard Bliss was an artillery officer like myself at one point. I know, very unfair, but you know, I gotta look out for my peeps. So we go to page, his chapter's on 121, and he's got some really specific things, but he talks about timing matters. You know, the golden hour for success is like in the first 60 to 90 minutes.
Yep.
And what happens if you include a link in your post?
It's death.
The what do they call it? The visibility it just plummets. They're like any social media platform. They don't want people, you know, they don't want you posting links and pulling people away from that walled garden.
Well, we were very fortunate to not just have Richard Bliss as an author of the book. He was also one of the featured presenters at my Uprising Marketing Retreat. And here's what happened. He did his presentation, and there were so many questions, and he had so much more to give that he said, look, we're going to schedule another session online for another hour. That's how good he is.
It was all about LinkedIn?
All about LinkedIn.
Oh, wow.
And the ideas in this book, I think they're really fresh and insightful. Now, Richard has done a lot in his career, but he's become a bit of a LinkedIn scientist. And his recommendations are based on a lot of research, data coming from LinkedIn, data coming from other sources. And I think the two big takeaways for me is this golden hour that you talk about. That if you want to really get traction on your post, they're looking for the engagement in the first hour. So if you present something very important on LinkedIn, like you really care about this, you want this to go, you need to reach out to some people and encourage them to have meaningful engagement in the first hour. They want to see, are you creating a conversation? Likes don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Shares don't matter, which is a bit shocking to me. What they're looking for is they present your post to 10% of your audience as a test. Will your audience respond to this? If they respond, then they expand the window. If you get more response, they expand the window again and send your post into open waters beyond your audience. Really big idea. The second idea that I saw work for myself in real life this week is LinkedIn is watching you, how you comment on other people's posts. And this is helping your credibility within LinkedIn, your visibility within LinkedIn, and it's also the number one way to grow your connections on LinkedIn. Now, I sort of saw this by accident this week. I do pretty well on LinkedIn. My content, you know, tends to do very well. And once in a while, I actually get a request from LinkedIn to comment on a post. So LinkedIn features somebody and they do this content about somebody. And so they did this post about how to keep working while you're suffering, if you're experiencing something. So I said, okay, what the heck? So I commented on this post about how I've had to be in situations where you're suffering. Before we pushed the record button today, you and I were talking about my mother recently died. Mm-hmm. How do you keep working? Well, most of my work is in one-hour segments, a Zoom call, a meeting, a discussion. So you create this mental mindset of, I need to get through this hour. What happens after that, who knows? But let's just create this bubble of mental toughness for 1 hour and get through this 1 hour as a goal. Now, when I comment on that, that comment gets sent to the feed, the content stream of all my followers and everyone else that's seeing this post. My followers on LinkedIn, they're just not seeing my content. They're seeing my comments.
Yes.
And when you create a meaningful comment, this gets sent into people's streams. And a lot of people don't think about that. Richard recommends like maybe doing 3 comments a day as a way to elevate your presence, your effectiveness, and your audience on LinkedIn. So Richard did a wonderful job with this chapter. And I can almost guarantee you're going to see some tips in this chapter you've never seen before.
Yes. Well, let me just put a pin in that part about the comment strategy. I thought this was great. Develop a comment strategy. Here's the biggest surprise when it comes to increasing your reach on LinkedIn. Instead of focusing exclusively on posting your own original content, consistently deliver killer comments on other people's conversations. By leaving lengthy, insightful, and valuable comments, you're raising your value on the LinkedIn radar. Even two or three meaningful comments a day can double or triple the number of your profile views in a single week. Do you know what surprised me the most in this chapter where he explains that video is not the star of LinkedIn?
Nope. I know. It seems counterintuitive, but he's got the research to back it up.
Yeah. The most successful type of content for reach and engagement is a text-only post or a text post with a single original image.
And again, it gets back to
But don't use ugly stock images, people.
No. It gets back to this idea of creating conversations. And what Richard says is that when people watch a video, it doesn't create a conversation. People don't. They don't tend to leave lengthy comments about a video. They leave lengthy comments about some idea, observation, or question that's in part of a text post.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's go to the last thing I want to talk about, which is part four, which you call marketing standards. Explain what is meant by the term marketing standards. Not everybody may understand that. Like the basics?
Yeah, well, we've got this, you know, this book that's is pretty broad, and I thought, well, you know, let's group it in the book into sections that make sense. So we had literally some of the world experts on things like email marketing, direct mail marketing, things that we might think, oh, that's kind of old-fashioned, but it's not. I mean, email marketing is more important than ever.
Yeah.
Creating and nurturing that email list is going to be gold for every business. And so I think these are standards. It's not necessarily revolutionary ideas compared to some of the other things we have in the book, but it's like the foundational ideas, the marketing standards.
Right.
And that's what's in this chapter.
Overlooked, but also big opportunities. Let me mention who's in here. Jeff Turan wrote Building Your Business with Direct Mail. And, you know, not to keep talking about Joe Polizzi, who, did I mention he's coming for you? He is always talking about how there's never been a better time for direct mail if used in the right instance.
Yeah.
And then Robbie Fitzwater, who seems to be the only person that wrote two chapters here, Magnificent Email Marketing. I'm going to go back to that. And then Search Engine Optimization, Larry Aronson. In that chapter, he talks about the importance of answering questions. This is not about tinkering with your website like people did 15, 20 years ago. It's if you're talking to an SEO firm and they're not talking to you about producing content for customers, go on to the next one. I'm sorry, let me get off my soapbox there.
Exactly.
And then Rob LeLacheur, is that how you pronounce his name? Rob LeLacheur.
Yes.
He's in Edmonton, Alberta. Go Oilers. And his chapter is on walking with dinosaurs, newspapers, billboards, and radio. Mark Schaefer, did you know that those things still exist?
You know, I got to say, Rob blows it away in this chapter.
Yeah.
He has some very, very clever ideas to say. It, you know, look, there's still a lot of audiences there, and they're dinosaurs that are losing share, and they're ready to make a deal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I loved his approach in that chapter.
Yeah, and television's also a great way to continue to build brands. Mm-hmm. Then promotional products, Sandy Rodriguez, and then Daniel Nessel, strategic communications, and about building trust, very important topic I really like. And then Zach Siepert, The Secret Power of Word of Mouth Marketing. Great chapter. Back to the idea of your customers being your marketing. And then Fiona Lucas in Australia wrote about community, which I seem to recall another book on the show earlier this year Oh, yeah, that's right. One. Building the brand.
Yeah. Love that
Belonging to the brand. I'm sorry. There's so
belonging
many books.
Belonging to the brand.
Yeah.
Well, why community is the last great marketing strategy.
Yes, and I will include a link to that that interview. So I want to jump to Robbie Fitzwater's email marketing, and not just because he invited me to speak to his MBA class at Clemson a couple times. And not to brag, but after I did it, he sent me two Clemson University cocktail glasses.
Oh, cool.
And for a brief moment, my kids thought I was kind of cool. But that faded very, very quickly. But I want to jump to his chapter on email marketing, and not just because I recently had an interview with Chad S. White about his phenomenal book, Email Marketing Rules, but because I think that Robbie's chapter was one of the funniest.
And I know funny. I'm a clownfish.
So on page 167, he writes, now keep in mind, this is a Clemson professor who sent me cocktail glasses. He writes, like drinking in high school, everyone is doing it, but very few people know what they are doing. That's comedy gold, Robbie. And then he goes on to write, email marketing is like the person your parents wanted you to date in high school. What does he mean by that, Mark Schaefer?
you're hitting a deep chord with me there. Okay, let's just get it out there. I mean, there was more than one girl in high school and college that told me, you know, Mark, you're the kind of guy I want to marry someday, but I just don't want to date you right now. You know, email marketing is solid. It's trustworthy. Maybe, you know, it's a little bland. It's not the cool kid. It's not Web3. It's not AI. But this is the technique you want to bring home to dinner.
Yeah, he writes, email doesn't ride a motorcycle or wear a leather jacket, so it may not get the attention it deserves.
Yeah, but you've got to, I mean, you've got to have it. I mean, at least now, I mean, one of the things I've been thinking a lot about is I've had the opportunity to engage with a lot of Gen Zers recently in MBA classes, and they just don't do email. I mean, they just don't. And it makes me think about, well, look, what happens when you get into the world and you get something from your insurance company via email, or you get something from your employer via email, or you get something from, you know, the government via email. I mean, you're just going to have to get into email, right?
But it's like talking to young people, explaining to them that you can actually use that smart device to talk to somebody in real time. It's called a telephone.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, a little thing inside me wonders about, are they going to be able to avoid email forever? But I mean, you've got to have it. I mean, just talking about me and my own business, Douglas, I did some introspection about a year ago about what was working and not working in my business. And I learned I've become lazy. I've ignored some blocking and tackling around my blog, my newsletter, my email list, and Robbie actually is helping me sort of rediscover some of these techniques to automate some things that should have been automated. And so I'm doubling down and tripling down on email as my marketing strategy, because these are the people who are going to buy things from me. It's a lot easier to connect with these people who want to be connected to me, who have opted into me and this email list, than try to sell something to strangers through advertising.
You know, it's funny you say that, because when I was reading Chapter 10, The Power of Podcasting by Marian Abrams and Chad Parisman, I mean, I'm a podcaster, and I saw a few things in there where I was slapping my head going, Douglas, what are you doing? This is a short chapter on the most important things about podcasting. You ought to do a couple of these things, you know? Mm-hmm. But let's just go one more here. Why is email marketing the cockroach of marketing channels, Mark?
That's another way.
That Robbie Fitzwater.
That Robbie Fitzwater. What are you going to do with him? You know, I love it because it's like the cockroach survives everything, right?
I mean, it won't die. Yes.
Yeah, you know, no matter what happens with the metaverse and AI, you're still going to have email marketing. It's never going to die. And Robbie was also at the Uprising retreat, and he said something that was one of the best quotes when it came to this, like this idea of the cockroach of marketing. He said, you know, you're not going to be able to outscale Walmart or Amazon, but you can outhuman them.
Yes.
And he used email in that way, that today, and it's a little bit maybe AI integration, but we have the ability to not just create personalization. We have the ability to really, truly be personal.
Mm-hmm.
And we shouldn't confuse that, because a lot of people think if they just slap someone's name at the beginning of an email, that's personal. It's not. That's personalization. And the irony is, personalization has become impersonal because we can detect it and delete it right away. But really being smart with your email strategy and really trying to be the most human company, we can do that today. We can really connect in a personal way at scale by implementing some of these tools. And that's Robbie's philosophy. That's my philosophy. And I'm committed to do a better job at that.
You may never outscale the giants in your space, but you can out-human them. Ugh.
Yep.
Just jumped right off the page at me. So, Mark, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
I think this is a book of hope. You know, we can feel overwhelmed in the world. The field of marketing is changing so fast. But ultimately, I think this is a book of hope, because it just gets down to, here are practical things, in many cases, very easy things that we can use to be effective today, you know, right now. I think people are going to wear out their highlighters with this book.
Yes.
Or you know, if sticky notes, you know, buy a new pad, because
yes,
you've got a lot of sticky notes that you're going to use. You're going to use in this book.
This book is like super concentrate.
Yeah, and I predict that a lot of people are going to have the same reaction that you did. That, look, you probably turned to the chapter on podcasting first because that's most relevant to you right now. And here you are. You've got one of the, you know, you're in the top 1%. Actually, I think you're in the top 0.5% of podcasts on iTunes.
Yes.
And look, you've got this track record, and yet you found something practical. You found something inspirational in that chapter. And I think this is a book of hope, because it's gonna there's gonna be inspiration for everybody in this book.
Oh, well said, well said. Well, Mark, are there any recent or upcoming books that you recommend or looking forward to reading?
You know, there are a couple that I love. One is Andy Crestadina's Content Chemistry book.
Oh, yes.
You know, I love Andy as a human, and all the reasons I love him as a human come through in this book. He has this sort of gentle authority about him. And that comes through in the Content Chemistry book. I think he came out with a new edition, the 6th edition, last year, and they keep getting better and better. It's practical, it's understandable, it's not overwhelming at all, and which is just like Andy. So I love that book. I love using Behavioral Science in Marketing by Nancy Harhut. Mm. Nancy is someone I've admired at least 6 or 7 years. I first saw her speak at Marketing Profs Didn't know her at all, had never heard of her before, and I saw her on the stage and immediately became a fan. So I was really excited to see her come out with this book. I believe this is her first book, Using Behavioral Science and Marketing. And this is a book that, I guess it's a little bit like the Most Amazing Marketing Book, is that is just chock full of ideas. There is something literally on every page that is an actionable idea, a case study, or inspiration. So she did an excellent job with that book.
She really did. Those are two excellent, excellent recommendations. I've interviewed them both on this show, and I can't believe that was Nancy's first book. And we talked about that during the interview. It seemed like a book that somebody who would have written 10 books would have written. Yeah. But it was so good, so helpful. I hope it's not her last one. And Annie Crestedina's book, every listener that's bought that book and has it sitting on their desk now, because it really is a reference. It's a chemistry book. The first half is the lecture. The second half is the lab. They have all talked about how helpful that book is. And one other thing about that book, that's based on like 20 years of research that they've been doing. There's no theory in there. It's chemistry. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. And
wonderful,
he's a great guy. Yeah. Well, at marketingbookpodcast.com, we're going to include links to everything linkable, including all the books mentioned, your site, your LinkedIn profile, your Twitter account. Listeners, please reach out to Mark and all the other authors who have contributed to this book and let them know you listen to this podcast and that you've got the book. And congratulate so many of them on becoming first-time authors. And if you are listening on your smartphone and you've subscribed to the Marketing Book Podcast on your favorite podcast app like Apple Podcasts, all these links can be found by going to this episode right now and clicking on this episode's website link. The book is the most amazing marketing book ever. The authors are Mark Schaefer and 35 of his very smart friends. Your Highness, thank you very much for joining us on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Oh, thank you, Douglas. It's been a pleasure and an honor as always.
And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and found it helpful. If you are one of the hundreds of listeners who have left an iTunes review, please let me return your kind favor by mailing you some Marketing Book Podcast bookmarks and laptop stickers. Just send me your mailing address anywhere in the world, and I'll drop it in the mail. And remember the words of the entrepreneur, author, and motivational speaker Jim Rohn, who said, "Formal education will make you a living. Self-education will make you a fortune."
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.
The drive to go further and reach higher. The same thing that inspires you inspires us. At Strayer University, we're always searching for new ways to make education more affordable. That's why we offer access to up to 10 no-cost gen ed courses to help you save time and money so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. No-cost gen eds provided by Strayer University affiliate Sophia Learning. Eligibility rules apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.